Greetings. This is Mina, and you're listening to Witch Mix, a podcast about all things witchy, mixed up with a whole lot more. Find the podcast at Podbean, Podcast Alley, and iTunes.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 5 of the Witch Mix podcast. I'm Mina. And today is an absolutely beautiful day here in Chicago. The sun is shining brightly. It's not cold out. It's just absolutely glorious. And I hope it stays this way until Christmas. Then you can let the snow come. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday, whatever you celebrate or not celebrate. I hope you had a good time nonetheless. I didn't get a chance to do the things that I planned to do or intended to do for the Halloween holiday. So I just spent a quiet evening with my two daughters. My husband was at work. And we just passed out candy and had a lot of fun doing that and watched several scary movies, stayed up late, ate a lot of junk. And it was great to spend time with the kids like that. For today's episode, I would like to talk about magical thinking. I also have an iPhone iPod Touch application review of witchy nature to share with you. I have a movie review, and I also have some notes from a spell that I cast recently. I'd like to share those with you as well. Right now, I'm going to take a little break, and I'm going to play a little music. This is Oya by Babatunde Olatunji. Thank you. Once again, that is Babatunde Olatunji, and that track is titled Oya or Aya, and it is from the album Drums of Passion. In the tradition of the Yoruba, Oya is seen as the goddess of sudden transformation and change. She is the owner of the winds, of hurricanes and cyclones. She represents rapid inner and outer transformation. I have a book titled Oya in Praise of an African Goddess, written by Drews Gleason. I'm reading that now, and in a future podcast, I'll have a review ready for you on that book. I got a chance to see Olatunji perform live back in the 80s in New York City, and I have to say, it was the most incredible experience. I didn't even know that he was going to be performing that night. I accompanied a friend to a party at a club called the Palladium in New York, and we were over in the VIP section of the club, and there was some party going on. I don't really know whose party it was, but we're back there having a good time, and all of a sudden these drummers come on stage and they start performing. And I'd heard of Olatunji before. I think my mom even had the album Drums of Passion, but I didn't know that was Olatunji, you know. And they were performing, and during the performance I closed my eyes and I absolutely felt transported from my being. Kind of sort of like an out-of-body experience. I don't really remember the details other than when I eventually opened my eyes, I remember my friend looking at me with this bewildered expression on his face, and neither one of us could speak for several moments. We couldn't even talk. We were just amazed. We were in this, you know, place of absolute amazement. And then later on, we were talking about it, and we were both like, what the hell happened back there? Because he had also closed his eyes, and he told me, man, I felt like I was out of my body. And I'm like, yeah, me too. You know, it was just being totally suspended in a place where time didn't exist. The world as we knew it just seemed to dissolve. And we just existed in this state of suspension of time and space. Incredible. Incredible experience that I'll never forget as long as I live. I decided to talk about magical thinking in this episode, and this basically is born from a conversation that I had with a friend who is a practicing Buddhist. And she's been practicing Buddhism for about 20 years, and she is pretty devout in her religious beliefs. And whenever we talk about, you know, some obstacles or situations in my life that present challenges, she always recommends chanting to me. And she's always encouraging me to accompany her to some of her Buddhist meetings in groups that they have. And I've always been pretty reluctant to do that. I've been in situations before, not with her, but with other friends who were practicing Buddhists. And there was just a air of pushiness there that I just really didn't appreciate. And so I just, you know, wrote it off for myself personally. So whenever we talk, she and I, you know, she's always like, you gotta chant, you know, and she always shares with me the chant, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. And she was basically saying, you know, if you do this and put your intent behind it, it will manifest in your life at some point. And so she and I got to talking about magical thinking. And she was really, really dogmatic about, you know, just refuting the idea of magic, that it has no place in Buddhism, that, you know, the whole philosophy has nothing to do with, you know, abracadabra, you know, that whole kind of way of thinking. And my position was that actually it does. You know, what you're doing in terms of using the words and putting the power in the intent, I said, that's basically the essence of magical practice. And she disagreed with me, and so we had this lively little debate. And, you know, when I left the conversation, it got me to thinking, you know, magic is pretty much a huge part of our culture. People just don't feel comfortable looking at it that way. But I'll give you a couple of examples. Not witchcraft, but wishcraft. It is prevalent in our society. Case in point, the happy birthday cake. We put the candles on the cake, we light the candles, and the birthday boy or girl makes a wish, blows out the candle. That's candle magic. That is basic candle magic. You know, you've got the fire there, you've got your intent that you want to see manifest, and you're adding the element of air, or you're breathing, you know, that intent when you blow that flame out. And then the little wisp of smoke that emanate from the blown out candle that dissipate into the universe, carrying your wishes so that they will be heard. And, well, come on, candle magic. And then you've got your offering, you know, the cake and the other little goodies, right? Other types of wishcraft include wishing on a star. You know, we've got a little incantation that goes along with that. Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. I wish I may, I wish I might have the wish I wish tonight. Okay, I can't even remember where I first learned that. I had to have been really, really, really young. And I have to have said it a lot because I know, you know, it's ingrained. It's tattooed on my brain for whatever reason, because it's a strong aspect of our culture, you know, to see the first star, make a wish. A lot of people are fortunate to see shooting stars or falling stars, and it's very common for people to make wishes on these stars. What about the success rate of this type of wishcraft? I don't think the success rate is that good, personally. Why? Because I don't think the people are really taking it that seriously. And I don't think that the intent behind it is that strong, because most people don't really think of it that way. You know, the culture that we live in doesn't promote that kind of practice. So, you know, they've got aspects of their religion that promote it in the form of prayer. But other than that, you know, these little cultural things that we do that are basically steeped in magic, we just kind of put on the back burner. We don't even think about it that way. Can you imagine if everybody did start thinking about it that way? Another magical practice is sex magic, the art of the glamour. Glamour is basically, you know, a lot of the vampires do it. It's basically shifting the person's view or perception. You see it happen a lot in the vampire series True Blood. In the movie The Craft, you had the four young witches learning the art of glamouring. They were able to transform their physical appearance to deceive the viewer, you know, whoever's looking at them, that they were actually looking at something else. Well, regular old folks practice that a lot. Particularly women. How do they do it? This is how they do it. By emphasizing or altering their own physical appearance. You know, my husband always teases me that women are the biggest liars, because they have the fake hair, the fake boobage, the high heel shoes to seem taller than what they are, the girdle so they'll look slimmer than what they really are, the fake eyelashes, the makeup, etc., so on and so forth. Well, to an extent, that is a form of glamoring, right? I mean, why is it called glamour in the first place? You know, you are taking something, right, and you're doing something to it to alter its appearance, so that whoever is looking at you will have a certain perception. And women do it often to do what? Attract a mate. Please excuse that awful noise in the background. That's my coffee maker going through its self-cleaning and power down cycle. Now, I'm going to get a little facetious here and say that, you know, a lot of Americans, people in general, practice fertility magic. How do they do that? Well, during the act, you often hear a lot of calling out to deities. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, my God, oh, my God, and ooh, baby. Yeah, you're basically putting your intent out there. Hey, God, I want a baby. Fertility magic. And then we have money magic, right? How many times have you gone into a small business and you see the first dollar posted on the wall there behind the cash register, right? What is that about? Another form of money magic? Outside walking around, find a penny, pick it up all day long, you'll have good luck. I don't know anybody that's never heard of that one, and most people actually practice it. You know, it's like, okay, what do you think is going on when you see that penny on the ground and you pick it up and put it in your pocket or your pocketbook? What is the point in all of that? Why go through those motions if you didn't believe that it could actually happen? I know so many people that do that, but yet if you were to tell them, hey, you're practicing a form of magic there, they'd be ready to curse you out. And likewise, you have the wishing well. As a kid, I could not walk past a fountain that I couldn't throw a coin into. You know, I don't know where I first saw this. You know, it had to have been, you know, somebody in my family, obviously, somebody older doing this. And I just felt like, you know, it's really bad luck to walk past a water fountain without throwing in a coin. And there will be hundreds or thousands of coins already there. So you know it's not just you, right? It really isn't just you. A lot of people believe that something good is going to happen if they pitch a coin into the water fountain. Now think about that. Water, flowing, currency, right? So the premise there is if I put a coin into this flow of water, then more of it is going to flow and find its way back to me in my life, right? That's the basic premise of that type of magic. And there are many other examples I could give about witchcraft, but I'm going to end it there. I'd like to touch upon an article that I came across on the internet from the New York Times that basically held a view about magical thinking in a very negative light. It was, first of all, attributing magical thinking to indigenous, reed, irrational tribal people, and basically saying that, you know, if you are a Western-minded person, then you really can separate yourself in terms of these non-Western cultures of people who believe in all this stuff. And what I found really interesting is that it touched on religious thinking, but managed to kind of separate magical thinking out from Western religious thinking, which is entrenched in magical thinking. I mean, you cannot get more magical than an Immaculate Conception, okay? You just can't. Levitation, all right? Turning water into wine, all right? Burning bushes. I could go on about the countless examples we find in Western religion that are steeped in magical thinking, but somehow that's okay. You know, a prayer is just a prayer. It's not some sort of magical incantation, right? And then you have this big law of attraction movement, which a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. Personally, I'm finding that the people who publish law of attraction books and workshops and seminars and DVDs, they seem to want be the ones that are benefiting the greatest monetarily than the people who are actually practicing it. Although I have read testimonies of people who managed to make law of attraction practice work for them. And I am not going to say that they're wrong because they're practicing witchcraft. All right. And that's something I believe in. It works for me. And on that note, I will share the notes I have from my little spell. It was a money spell. I didn't use any props or tools or any types of magical items in this particular spell. I basically use my own intent. I meditate daily, pretty much daily, and I decided to use some instructions that I got from one of Ariel's Witches Primer podcasts about creating an orb of light. And so I visualized that. I visualized being in my secret magic place, which is where I usually go to when I meditate on a regular basis, and I visualized this ball, this sphere emanated originally from my own hands and took the form of a circle or a bubble. And I projected light and energy into it. And in this case, the object of my desire or my intent, which was money. And I basically threw this ball up and it just floated up, 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 up into the sky and into the universe. And that was the end of that. And I basically forgot about it and didn't give it any more thought, and just waited without waiting, if that makes sense. And a couple of days ago, there was a knock on the door, and it was a man, and he basically said, "Hey, I'll give you a couple $100 for that van you have in your backyard." Apparently, he had been driving in the alley and saw an old van that we have that is parked in our backyard that is no longer working. And people have wanted to buy it from us, but we don't have the title. It's misplaced. You can't find it. And so we were unable to get rid of this van. And we couldn't even sell it for parts because, you know, they want the title. But this fella had some paperwork with a little writer on there. It basically said, "I confirm that I have misplaced my title, yet I am selling this car to this person." And so I signed it and let him go back there and get the van. And he had a tow truck and he towed it away and gave me a couple $100. And we had just resolved to actually pay someone that amount to take it out of our yard. We were basically saying, "Hey, if you take this van off our hands, we'll give you money." And so is it just a coincidence that this guy showed up on my door about a month after I performed my little money spell? Who knows? You know, my husband would definitely be the first person to chalk it up to a coincidence because he doesn't believe in anything magical. But without saying anything, you know, I haven't discussed this with anyone. I'm talking to you about it. I believe that that was, in fact, a result of what I did a month ago. And it was all visualization and all intent, no candles, no incense, no magic circle, nothing. Now, what I'm interested in doing in the future, however, is actually incorporating some tools and things into my future money spells. And one that I came across that really, really appealed to me is one from the North Indian tradition of magical practice. I came across this spell from a website, a blog actually, for Dr. Snake. It's Dr. Snake's Voodoo Spells and Magic blog, and the URL is www.doktorsnake.com, Dr. Snake. And it's the coconut lottery spell, actually. And it reads, "In Jadu, the magic of northern India and many other parts of Asia, the coconut is a sacred fruit. It's called Sri Phala and is the fruit of Sri, goddess of wealth and prosperity, also known as the goddess Lakshmi or Lakme. The coconut is also a symbol of fertility and is presented by priests to women who wish to have children. In short, it's all about growth and increase." And you basically take a medium-sized coconut, wrap it in green cloth or green yarn or wool or twine until it's covered completely. And then there is an incantation. Now, this incantation is specifically for folks that are interested in winning the lottery. And the incantation is, "Coconut of Sri, bring me prosperity. helped me choose winning numbers in the lottery. And then it goes on to say, you use automatic writing to come up with the numbers that you wish to pick for your ticket. And I don't really know a lot about automatic writing, but I imagine that one would attain a really relaxed state, you know, maybe through trance or meditation. And from that point, have a pen and paper handy and just write down whatever comes to your mind with the focus and intent on receiving certain numbers. Now, my notes from the spell as it's written on the blog in there, but I don't know if that was just a copy and paste error on my part or if it actually ended there, but I go on to take the numbers that were given or transmitted to you and go out and buy that ticket and place that ticket on the altar under that coconut. Once the spell has been completed, do take the coconut and give it back to nature as an offering or an offertory gift. One of my favorite places is at the bottom of a tree. Other people like to give offerings to bodies of running water. Some people like to make fire offerings. You know, however you feel is the best way to give it back as a show of gratitude. It's basically up to you. You know, go with your feelings on the best way, but just don't skip this step, okay? You want to make the circle complete. And if you don't close it up by acknowledging your gifts, acknowledging your blessings, and acknowledging the power that allow these blessings to manifest, chances are you might lose it just as easily as you got it. You don't want that to happen. All right, next up is my iPhone app review, also good for iPod touches. And that is the application titled Liber Umbrarum et Lux. Now, I do not know Latin, so if I'm botching the pronunciation, you know, sorry. But this is basically translated into Book of Light and Shadow. And this person, they are just so incredible to publish this as an iPhone app because it's so personal. There's a very personal touch to this app, and it almost feels like I'm sort of eavesdropping on this other person's spirituality, you know, because it is so personalized. But there is still so much useful and beneficial information in this book. Now, people who follow traditional witchcraft and Wicca in the religious sense, particularly if they belong to a group or a coven, keeping and producing a book of shadows is, you know, pretty much standard. It's, you know, a general practice. Solitaries also make and create their own books as well. So this isn't a sort of how-to book for that. It's just basically one person's experiences and sharing them with others who may benefit from it, me being one of those people. I'd like to actually read to you what it says in the About This Book section. I read, traditionally, one of the tasks of a new initiate is to write out their own Liber Umbrarum, or Book of Shadows. They would copy this from their tutor or their coven priestess, or could copy from the books of various others in the coven. Although their book would start off being copied from others, it would continue to evolve as the witch progressed. Over time, every Liber Umbrarum becomes as unique as the witch who owns it. The copy you are now holding in your hand has been transcribed from my own personal book and is up to date as of the time of this writing. For more info about this book, please visit my Liber Umbrarum website, and then it just tells you how to find that, and I will share that with you. So when you first open up this app, you have a list of chapters. You have the introduction, a chapter called The Old Book, one for rituals, consecrations, spells, herbal magic, and then a glossary. So, just tapping on the introduction, there's a sort of prose there about darkness and light that's really, really beautiful. On the old book, you have sub-chapters, old prologue, prayer of Isis, cone of power, Gaia, meeting dance of calls of power, unbelief, ordeal of the art magical, to get the sight, to leave the body, usage of runes, ways of making magic, the witch's reed, and working tools. Under the ritual chapter, you have the sub-chapters opening ritual, charge of the goddess, calls and chants, and then the closing ritual. And then the next chapter is consecrations. You have water and salt, sword or athame, other working tools, personal jewelry, meals of grace, and wine and cakes. In spells, you have a very impressive list: anointing ointment, candle spells, cord spells, Esue spell, I'm probably saying that wrong, mirror charm, protection spell, cat protection spell, a small invocation to open a gateway, and the witch's ladder. Under herbal magic, this is a really abbreviated list of herbs, and rather than have the magical correspondences to these different plants, what she has is the parts of the herb or plant that are used and their medicinal uses. So it's kind of, it's under the topic herbal magic, but there is really no magic here. But the medicinal uses of these different herbs is pretty helpful. I did give a review of the iPhone app Herb Magic in episode 4. So if you're interested in an iPhone app that, gives you info on Herb Magic, and I also gave a review on Crystal Magic as well. So check out episode 4 for more information about that. So getting back to the Book of Light and Shadows, the final chapter is a glossary. And it is pretty extensive. It has photos in it and diagrams. It starts out with A for Akasha, and it ends where? Ends in which? And it says, one who follows the old religion. The term can be used for males as well as females. A witch does not necessarily have to belong to a coven or be casting spells. She may simply follow the basic naturalistic roots of the religion. It's really, really a wonderful app. I find it very useful as I, increase my own knowledge about the religion in and of itself. I really, really like and appreciate the rituals, and I don't know if I'll be practicing them, anytime, but it's nice to have a resource like this. So I highly recommend this app. For anyone that's interested in learning more about the craft, learning more about the formal structure involved in traditional witchcraft, definitely check out Liber Umbrarum et Lux. Now for my movie reveal. Now, backtracking a little bit, in previous episodes, I have made mention of my house ghost. And I've also mentioned that I had a couple of people kind of check it out for me. And I don't think I shared with you what they said, other than I had nothing to worry about. Well, one person came through and felt absolutely nothing. The second person felt a presence, but they told me that it was basically from a previous occupant of the house and that they had a sort of protective feeling about the house and I guess their family at the time they were living, because the vision that she got was one of a young man who was standing outside with a weapon, a gun, some sort of musket gun, and he was shooting at something or someone in the distance. And that was all she could give me about that. But the consensus is that, there's nothing to fear. Okay. So on that note, I'm done. Now, saw the movie Paranormal Activity a few days before Halloween, and it scared the crap out of me because, of the similarities of some of the things that have been happening here in this house and what was going on in the movie. I appreciate the fact that it's a very low budget film that has done really, really incredibly well at the box office. And it's taken in the sort of mockumentary style, reminiscent of the Blair Witch Project, where you have video footage that is left behind and found by others who take the footage and then edit it out to sort of tell the story of the camera people, you know, the people who actually shot the footage. And it's very, very well done, in my opinion, Paranormal Activity. The characters are very believable. It's a couple that they're not a married couple. I think they're engaged, and they had recently moved into a tract house, like a suburban, you know, brand new tract house, really cute little starter home. And they begin experiencing paranormal activity. It starts out, you know, really subtle at the beginning. The female character has had experiences in the past, ever since she was a child, of paranormal events. And some of them are pretty dramatic. And so whatever is going on, it seems to be attached to her. You know, it's not like they move into a haunted house. What's going on has a link to her life in some way. And unfortunately, we never find it out exactly what that link is. At some point, they do call a professional of the paranormal to come in and assess the situation. And he's helpful in some regards and not helpful in others. And let me just say, the ending of the movie was just horrible. It was horrible. Not in it was a bad movie horrible, but just horrible, the circumstances. Very unexpected. And it's a movie that I recommend. If it's still playing in your local theaters, do go see it if you haven't already. And if you haven't seen it and you miss it at the theaters, do rent it when it comes out on DVD, or wait for it to come on cable. Definitely DVR that one. You shouldn't miss it. It was good and scary for me. My husband saw it and he was like, eh. You know, but he had the same reaction when he saw The Blair Witch Project, and you know, that movie scared me too, so you know, I enjoyed it. So I believe that wraps up episode 5 of the Witch Mix podcast. I don't know what my topic is going to be next time. We'll see. I don't know when I'll be podcasting next time, so just, you know, check back, check the blog out, and see what's going on. Before I leave, I just want to make a quick mention of some of the podcasts that I've been listening to lately. Darkly Fae is no longer Darkly Fae. We have now seen her transform her podcast totally into Spirits Cast, and she's no longer going by Fae. She is now using her real name, which is Faithling, which is beautiful. I forget her last name, but I don't have the info in front of me, but you can find Spirits Cast on iTunes. And that's where I found it, and I really like the direction that she's going in. It's very, very different from the Darkly Fae podcast. So check it out, and I guarantee that you will definitely enjoy what she's doing over there. Another podcast that I listen to is Pagan Chaos Magic with Kaya or Kia Dragon. He had a podcast where he addresses the whole pronunciation of his name, and he seems to go either way with the Kaya or the Kia. And I've actually heard him say both, so Kaya, Kia, Dragon. Excellent podcast. The last one I listened to, he was playing some really kick-ass music from Ani DeFranco, which was like, you know, right up my alley. Loved it. I really like his music selections, and the stuff that he podcasts about it's pretty different for me and very, very interesting overall. So check out Pagan Chaos Magic at paganchaosmagic.com, and I believe you can also find the podcast on iTunes as well. And let's see, who else? Oh, I've been listening to Elemental Castings. That is a pretty good one, too. It's pretty different from what I've been listening to lately in terms of the witchy, pagan types of podcasts that are out there. But that's Elemental Castings with T-Thorn Coyle, and I have links to all of these podcasts at yourwitchiness.blogspot.com. That is the URL for my blog where you can catch my podcasts and the others mentioned here. Another is Ariel. He took a break for a really long time from podcasting his A Witcher's Primer. And I'm happy to announce that he's come back and he's added a couple of new podcasts to the list. But the last one I heard, he said that was going to be it for Witcher's Primer because he basically covered everything that he wanted to cover in terms of Witchcraft 101 and a focus being on non-denominational witchcraft. But he said he would come back from time to time to address maybe some listeners' questions and things of that nature that he feels may be of benefit to us, the listeners. So check that out. There's a link to that as well. And again, the URL for the blog is yourwitchiness.blogspot.com. So that's it for me. Take care, you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving holiday next week. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Witch Mix, a podcast about all things witchy, mixed up with a whole lot more. Until next time, brightest blessings.